Thanksgiving from those of us here at ChicagoFootball.com. I am Kevin Fishbane, joined by Arthur Arkush as we record this podcast a little bit earlier than normal. The Bears are on a short week. We are as well getting ready for Bears-Packers on Thursday night. We still got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to talk to Eric Edholm from Yahoo Sports and 120 Sports, talk some NFL stuff. And then we'll be joined by Wes Hodquitz in the second half of the show to preview Thursday night's game at Lambeau Field. Of course, our executive producer on hand, Dan Mott, and associate producer, John Solly. And Arthur, I guess we should do a little recap, of course, of Sunday's loss to the Broncos, 17-15. Well, first, how are you this morning, Arthur? Usually we talk in the late afternoon, but it's the morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I'm not necessarily a morning person, but feeling good to get this truncated Thanksgiving week going, and appreciative for you, the hardest working man in show business, who in spite of a short week still has a star-studded podcast lineup for us today. So ready to dive in.
Yeah, I could probably tell you about 17,000 people that are working harder than I am. and of course, I do have to give a quick shout out. We are I'm not in studio for this. I am at my apartment. So a quick shout out to my roommates, Danny and Sarah, who are, I think might still be sleeping, who are putting up with this. So great appreciation to them. And maybe they'll learn a little bit more about the Bears after hearing us for the next 45 minutes or thereabouts. Arthur, Bears-Broncos. A weird game, which I kind of thought was going to be like that all week because you had the new quarterback on Denver's side. You had a really good Broncos defense against the Bears offense with no Jeffrey, no Forte. At times, you kind of thought Denver was going to pull away. But as we've seen with this coaching staff, the Bears are not going to get blown out. And Cutler did it again in the fourth quarter, kind of, almost brought them all the way back. Let's go ahead and just talk about the fourth and goal because I think that's kind of been the talking point for the week from Bears fans. It was a surprising move from John Fox with 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, trailing by 8 from the 4-yard line after two consecutive incomplete passes to go for it on fourth down. What was your – I'll give you a two-parter. I want your gut reaction to the call, and then in hindsight, what did you think of the decision?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to have 20/20 hindsight vision because I have to admit we were sitting next to each other in the press box, and at the time – I didn't have a huge problem with it. I was just taking the simplistic approach. They're down by 8. I figure if they kick a field goal, they're still obviously going to need a touchdown. So it was kind of my my short view approach, and didn't really have a huge problem with it at the time. It was the closest, obviously, they had gotten all day. That was part of Fox's reasoning after the fact. And, of course, John Fox will tell us that it's always nice to be able to use hindsight. All you got to do is look at the math, and clearly a field goal there could have very well changed the outcome of the game. And it became a little bit more disappointing then, and certainly opened Foxy up to a lot more scrutiny that I know he's received this week.
Yeah, you know, with you, my first reaction, I mean, I was stunned because it was so un-Fox-like. There is some irony to the fact that he didn't think they'd be down there or at least get that close again, and they got there twice, essentially, because, you know, Cutler had that fumble at the Broncos 33-yard line. So they were driving then, and then, of course, they got the other opportunity to bring it down, and of course, they scored the touchdown and missed the two-point conversion. So they had their chances, and I think he obviously didn't expect that, and, you know, if he knew they'd get back there again, I'm sure he would have taken the points. But listen, Arthur, as you know and our listeners know, I'm a fan of Northwestern football. Northwestern has a very bad offense. So I know what it's like to watch a team get down near the goal line when they need a touchdown. And you're just like, go for it, because who knows if they'll be back again. And I really do believe that if Fox was not a ultra-conservative coach like the way we know him to be, I wonder if how much of the people that are criticizing him, it was more – shocking. You know, and actually I talked to somebody who was at the game, and he said around him, nobody in the fan section was really that upset about it. I know some folks have said it was a bad call, but I'm interested to think, to see what you think, if maybe Fox's history factors into the way people consider the call he made.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. It's an interesting point. And we had been, hand-wringing at points this season, even given some of the limitations of this offense without some of their best guys from a health standpoint with Fox's conservative approach. It hasn't been a surprise, but it's a topic that had been brought up, on multiple occasions. So maybe that's still fresh in people's heads when Fox decides to flip the script. So the other side of it, of course, that we didn't mention is that the Bears have I haven't checked the updated rankings. They were the 28th red zone offense in the league going into that game, and they had whatever the sixth or seventh most accurate field goal kicker in NFL history. So just kind of, you know, certainly it adds a couple other wrinkles to the decision, but you have to wonder if Fox maybe would have been better off going with the automatic chip shot and then kind of hedging his bets maybe on an Osweiler turnover or something like that. But again, hindsight is 20/20, and at the time it seemed like an okay decision to me anyway.
It is kind of amazing to think that here are you and I sitting and chatting about a game that you could look at one or two calls that kept the Bears from winning when 6-7 weeks ago, 4 or 5 months ago when the schedule came out, no one thought this was going to be a game. And obviously yep. There were some extenuating circumstances, but as we've talked about, and I think we'll get to this when we preview the Thanksgiving game against Green Bay, that the Bears stay competitive and, you know, came down to that 2-point conversion. And Arthur, we watched it a zillion times. I watched it again a few times on Monday. I'll have more on it in the All 22 slideshow. It was, you know, communication was the Bears' issue in the game because, for example, Demaryius Thomas touchdown, wide open. He's not supposed to be wide open in the middle of the field. Tracy Porter admitted that was on him to not getting the calls across when Thomas went in motion.
Yeah,
and then 2-point conversion. You know, Matt Slauson admitted communication error. John Fox, of course, wouldn't give us any details, but Hronis Grisou, the center, was pass blocking. It was the exact same play they ran in San Diego for 2 points. I had singled out Martellus Bennett for running a route. But if you watch that play in San Diego, he ran a route there too to kind of attract the defense. So, the players and team understandably is not going to single out Grisou, but you can just watch the play. I know you talked to him. And I don't know if it would have made a difference the way Denver's defense is coming after it, but that play didn't work. And it's not good for communication errors to come up, but it's amazing that that's what kept the Bears from beating a very good Broncos team.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Maybe that's why people haven't gone a little harder on John Fox, because you talked about the extenuating circumstances, obviously. But this staff has these guys coached up so well and kind of playing over their heads right now. So if you want to scrutinize his one decision, great. But he's put them in position to be in so many of these games where they wouldn't have been, obviously over the past two seasons. So that's one side of it. And then just quickly on Hronis Grisou, yes, he absolutely owned it after the fact in the locker room. But I have to say, and I know you've dissected the All 22 a little closer than I have, clearly he got into a pass set, but it wasn't his guy that got through, was it?
No, well, I mean, TJ Ward has got through, but
on the backside of the play, right?
On the backside, and you know, when I'm looking, I'm thinking, well, maybe is Marty supposed to chip him? We don't know what Bennett's
never
supposed
will.
To do, right? But I think if you watch the San Diego play, there was some edge pressure that just kind of went behind Langford as he went right up the middle. But now, granted, Denver got way more penetration than San Diego did. I mean, it was a huge hole for Langford to go through. But, it's always interesting after a game to be able to dissect plays that turn the game. And we'll get more into some of those key plays right now in our weekly look back in the three and out.
One, two, three. I'm going to give you to the count of three.
Then shalt thou count to three.
I'm going to count to three.
One, two, five.
Lisa, three.
Three and out.
All right, Arthur, one positive, one negative, one moment that mattered for you and myself from Sunday's game. Let's start with you. What was your biggest positive?
I'm going to go with Marquise Wilson. His first 100-yard game in the NFL, was a big play guy. He came off only four catches, was found deep behind the defense on a number of broken plays, in part because of Jay Cutler's outstanding ability to navigate inside and out of the pocket, but also Marquise Wilson's ability to gain, you know, separation even after the play becomes off schedule. So I think we have to remind ourselves often that this is a former seventh-round pick, and the expectations they were a little little bit blown out of proportion, maybe by Phil Emery early on. And I know people maybe haven't been pleased with how quickly he has developed per se, but there's no question that he's improving. And he really was kind of the singular. Josh Bellamy had the one big catch, but he was the one guy Cutler could depend on from that receiving core Sunday.
Yeah, and you know he was able to kind of work with Cutler when Cutler moves a pocket, which was my probably ultimate positive was the way Cutler's footwork's been great all year long. I will go into defense. You know, the pass rush did a nice job for the most part. If you look at some of Osweiler's biggest plays, it was tight ends leaking out in the flat, you know, hitting Vernon Davis over the middle. Obviously, we talked about the throw to Thomas, but five sacks, the season high. You had it coming from all different directions. Adrian Amos on a blitz. You had Bruce Gaston just mauling over Evan Mathis for the sack. So nice to see that get going. I thought Willie Young had a pretty active game, but the Bears are going to continue to need more of that, especially on Thursday against Aaron Rodgers. What was your biggest negative from the game?
Yeah, I have to stick with defense, and it was certainly the inability to defend the stretch run plays. It appeared to me, I don't know, the Broncos just had so much urgency getting out to the perimeter, and the Bears, whether it was a lack of discipline, whether it was a lack of preparation, they just were not on point in allowing a season-high rushing yards and allowing Ronnie Hillman to get over 100. Just not the effort you needed to see, and I felt they should have known better with regards to Gary Kubiak and what he wanted to do, having a guy who could kind of open up some of that running stuff with the boot action. So a big disappointment and potentially a big concern, because I can promise you that the Packers paid close attention to that on tape, and it's one of the staples of their running offenses. So it's something the Bears will have to correct on a short week.
Yeah, and I'll take the other side of that, in that the Bears couldn't run the ball as a big negative. I mean, this is a team that tries, and I give them credit for being patient, continuing to try to run the ball. And Kadeem Carey was the only one who really got some positive games before he suffered the concussion. But man, you know, Jeremy Langford couldn't get moving. The offensive line wasn't creating many holes. And you look at this team that's so focused on run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, and they've only gone over 100 yards three, four times this year. You know, their best running game was week one against Green Bay. So that's something that they're going to need to pick up. Your one moment that mattered in Sunday's loss, Arthur.
Yeah, it's obvious, and we've talked about it a little bit, but it probably deserves talking about a little bit more. It's obviously the failed two-point conversion. It was obviously a design pass play that Cutler changed to a check, and a little bit ironic that we have been lauding Cutler for his ability to read defenses and make adjustments at the line, and then in the biggest play of that game, he was unable to. I thought he clearly made the wrong decision. Now, all that being said, you know, and Cutler had a couple turnovers in this game too. I thought he did a lot of good things. This doesn't take away from all the positives he's had. And I think it's easy to forget this was yet another starting offensive line combination. You got backup wide receivers out there. So some of the communication gaffes that occurred, I think, are understandable. But we have to call it like it is. I would have loved to have seen that ball head to either Zach Miller or Martellus Bennett, your two big-time red zone threats, for a chance to send that game into overtime.
Yeah, they didn't use Bennett. Bennett was covered very closely. The Broncos did a nice job with him. He did draw two pass interference penalties in the fourth quarter. Zach Miller had one big catch in that final drive, and that was about it. So, you know, some credit to Denver. I'm going to look at first and goal from the seven earlier in the game, early in the fourth quarter when they went for fourth and goal. Jeremy Langford caused a swing pass. I thought it was a great play, really well designed, and I thought it was a touchdown. And Brandon Marshall, Broncos linebacker Brandon Marshall, came out of nowhere, flying sideline to sideline, to knock Langford out of bounds at the four-yard line. And otherwise, I think it would have been a touchdown. And then they got three incomplete passes in a row, and that was that. And I kept thinking about that play because, you know, like John Fox, I thought, that, wow, that could be the closest they get to scoring touchdowns. So that play, it really stuck in my mind. I'm looking forward to kind of watching it again to see if he was actually close to scoring, if it wasn't just you know, me not paying much attention from our Soldier Field press box spot at the opposite end zone. But
and can I just add one thing to that quickly? Because it's a great call, and it was a very huge play in the game. I just wanted to say about Brandon Marshall and Danny Trevathan, fifth and sixth rounders, stud inside linebackers. Just a reminder for Bears fans, you can find these guys, and John Fox is one of the guys who most deserves credit for turning them around. So I know that's going to be a position the Bears are focused on this offseason, and I just thought it's worth mentioning that these studs the Broncos have manning the inside were late-round guys that the Bears will be looking for.
Arthur, I'm going to move our Thanksgiving talk to a little bit later in the show. I want to spend the next 2 minutes before we talk to Eric Edholm talking about Kevin White, because as we're chatting, news is coming across the wire that Kevin White will practice on Tuesday. That begins a 21-day practice window for the number 7 pick in the draft. Now, let's make it clear, I do not expect him to play in a game this season. Credit, of course, by the way, to Chicago Tribune's Rich Campbell for breaking that news. I do not expect Kevin White to play in a game, but it's good for him to get used to John Fox's practices, to get used to practicing with his teammates, just an NFL practice schedule for the next 3 weeks, and then I assume they'll put him on injured reserve. And I think everyone can agree it's a positive sign looking at somebody who's going to be so crucial to the team next year and beyond.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, in this season, with all the injuries the Bears have dealt with, would anyone really have been surprised if they just shut him down, or if it was kind of covering up another setback, if you will? And I don't think it's obviously that if he is going to practice. But it's nice news when there hasn't been a lot of great news on the injury front. And as Campbell pointed out in his story this morning, I thought was a really interesting point. Perhaps John Fox is just, you know how he feels about his competitive advantage. So maybe putting Kevin White out there will have teams in the final few weeks wondering if they could see someone that they won't have any tape on that could be a factor as well.
Yeah, that could be an interesting pickle for John Fox, because he loves lowering expectations, so he doesn't want anyone to really think that White's going to play, but he also loves having any competitive advantage, so maybe he will make teams think
his head
Kevin
must
White,
be spinning, right?
This must be wild. It is also total Bears to wait until the last day of the practice. No, but I think there's a safety thing there. They're going to do everything they can precaution-wise to make sure Kevin White, because remember, this surgery happened as a result of a setback originally. So, you know, people need to remember that they got to be extra careful with a guy that they, you know, want to build the offense around for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons as their top wideout, or maybe their number 2 wideout if Alshon Jeffrey returns. And we're going to shift gears a little bit, talk some NFL, Bears, Packers, random things that we want to talk about with our good friend and former Pro Football Weekly colleague, Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner and 120 Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. Hey, Eric, happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, the same to you guys. Thanks for having me on again. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, Eric was our first guest, so we've reached like week 11. This is our 13th show, so every 13th show, I guess we can rehash guests. So appreciate you coming back on the show. That you're the first 2-time guest in the show. So that's
is that right? Guess. Wow, yeah. Answer to a pretty good trivia question right there.
Yeah, well we're famous. When we overtake Bill Simmons on the charts, they're going to thank you. E-Dog, I want to actually, before we're going to talk some Bears Packers with you, but first I want to talk about Monday night's game for a second, and officiating in this NFL. Are the officials really that bad or that much worse, or are we just noticing it all more and we all have Twitter where we can like break down plays and GIFs so quickly? Is it chicken or the egg? Because, I mean, you keep every single week, every single primetime game, something bad happens and something goes wrong. Where do you credit this to?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I asked myself that a couple times this morning when I was writing about the, you know, the sort of two plays in question from last night, one being the inadvertent whistle. Look, and those sorts of things, I guess they happen. But at the same time, if you, as the explanation says, lost, track of the ball, why are you blowing your whistle? I would let someone else who actually saw where the ball was maybe make that call at that point and let them blow the play dead, even though that might be your responsibility. These guys are watching out for each other. They're supposed to have each other's back. And then the end of the game, obviously letting the college rule sort of play there where, you know, he gave himself up. Why in the world would a guy give himself up at the end of the game? It doesn't make any sense. But so when you have bad plays like that on primetime games with teams that stir up, you know, the dander with like the New England Patriots do, yeah, it's going to cause a firestorm. I always use the example, if Blake Bortles was caught deflating footballs, nobody would care. But the fact that these things happen in big games with marquee teams and that sort of things, we're going to get upset about it. And you're right. I mean, there was the whole play of the Seattle-Detroit game. There were other primetime games where this stuff seems to, you know, cause more issues. But yet no one really was that bothered when the Jacksonville Jaguars were awarded a win against the Ravens. I mean, why weren't people throwing their hands up and knocking down referees' doors. I mean, it for me, it's all about perspective. If it happens in a big game, playoff atmosphere, teams that get people all riled up, we're going to hear about it. If it doesn't, we probably won't.
That's a great point, Eric. And I quickly, maybe the most marquee coach, I just have to laugh because Bill Belichick, how did he not lose his mind after getting screwed out of what looked like a touchdown? He was pretty calm, actually. That was a bit surprising to me. But is there a solution? I mean, I know that's kind of the million-dollar question here. How can the officiating improve? And do you think, just to maybe play devil's advocate, that they have too much on their plate because the NFL is such a moving target with regard to the rule book each week?
Yeah, I mean, I'm of the belief that the rule book is like the tax code. You know, tear it up, you know, give them like four sheets of paper and say, fit it all on here. I mean, is that really realistically going to happen? Probably not. And, you know, a lot of people's solution is, well, you know, add more eyes, more, you know, eye in the sky and more officials. And for the Super Bowl, there should be 100 officials, you know. Is that really a solution? Are adding more voices going to make it a better product? Is it going to get it right? I don't know. We already have a replay system that should be a perfect fallback for this thing. So I don't know. I mean, every year this competition committee tries to tweak the rules and change the rules, and you've got the safety elements of the whole thing. There's a lot on these guys' plate. I'm not trying to, you know, say that they don't have – they're not mistake-proof or anything like that, but – I just think that every year you tweak and add rules and make, you know, their changes, it makes them that much harder. They have a billion things going through their heads, just like Tom Brady does too. He's good at it, but not all quarterbacks think on the same level as Brady does, just like not all officials are John Perry's and the really good referees in the league.
And Eric, I won't bore you with our existential question from episode 107 of this podcast, which is, what is a catch? Because we spent about half of that podcast after the famous Golden Tate play trying to figure out what a catch is. Nobody knows. Nobody will ever know. And actually, watching Northwestern Wisconsin this weekend, that what is a catch thing went next level, because I thought that was totally a catch, but I didn't mind because my team won.
Well, that's what happens, right? Your team wins, and you go, oh, okay, I'm
cool. That's fine. Oh, by the way, guys, you two are Missouri grads. Yes. We're taping this Tuesday morning. Big basketball game tonight, Northwestern versus Missouri, battle of the journalism schools. And I think both might lose because it's basketball. Very possible. So keep an eye out.
Give the edge to Missouri on the losing thing tonight. They played Northwestern played UNC pretty tough, from what I could tell. So yeah, I'm not seeing a Tigers W in this one.
More on that in our Chicago basketball podcast this week. Eric, before we get to Bears Packers, one more quick NFL news I want your take on. This Jeff Fisher Case Keenum concussion situation. You know, just from reading the way Jeff Fisher responded to it and saying, you know, it's no one's fault and, you know, he didn't see it. And then he kind of said, yeah, he went in for two more plays and I'm not really sure why. That is not a great look for the NFL. It's certainly not a great look for Fisher, who's on that competition committee you alluded to. And he said, like, more needs to be done. But I feel like the NFL is doing everything it possibly can to mitigate this situation, which is very hard to control to begin with. As you know, all these players want to stay in, even if you know, people know they've been concussed. But, you know, what is your hot take on the whole Fisher situation? And is there anything that could be adjusted coming from it?
Yeah, I mean, if they weren't concerned, why was Nick Foles warming up on the sideline? You know, right. I mean, oh, just in case, just to keep him, because it was chilly outside? No, I mean, look, they had to know that Keenum was put in a compromised position, and the spotter has to go down there and say, yank this guy off the field. Look, I mean, whether you agree with the way it's set up or not, or whether you think this is the perfect system, it is the system. This is what they've implemented. This is how they've tried to help guys from suffering head injuries, potentially concussed, and then putting them back into harm's way. And you can't tell me he had his wits about him. I don't know what the proper PC term is for that these days, but you can't tell me enough suspicion wasn't raised from every single person who watched that game on television. And the spotter who sits in the press box and whose only job is to sit there and alert these guys for these sorts of things, I don't know if he didn't do it in time or if they chose to ignore it or if the trainer looked at Keenum and said, we're good. You know, this is okay. Let's send him back out there. Let's try to beat the one of the worst teams in football. I don't know. You know, so that's what it comes down to at this point. And I mean, look, I like the fact that they've taken measures to try to make these things better. You don't want somebody out there punch drunk, getting hit again and again and again. That's just going to lead to CTE and all the evil stuff we've seen in this league. But I don't know if the rules were followed or if they were ignored. That's the problem.
Eric, let's turn the page a little bit and talk Bears-Packers. And actually, we're going to get into the matchup quite a bit. And I have a feeling I know what you think about how the game's going to turn out Thursday night. But just from a national perspective, I'm curious to get your issue on a couple of the on a couple of the big Bears issues right now. And it's not necessarily right now, but maybe after the season. What do you think this team does with both Alshon Jeffery and Matt Forte, who have kind of complicated matters, Forte's matter with Jeremy Langford's emergence and Alshon Jeffery's obviously with these continuous injuries he's dealing with?
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously it's tough because you see how well he plays when he's out there, and probably not even at full strength too when he is playing. And you know, from his perspective, you can kind of get it, not wanting to go out there. There's a threshold, right? I'll play at 80%, but I'm not going to go out there at 65 and risk further injury. What does he had 4 different body parts that have showed up on injury reports this year with Alshon? So you know, he's trying to do what he can, I think. You know, I talked to him about it in the preseason. He had zero interest in talking about his free agency. I mean, that was the second I brought it up, it killed the interview. I mean, he just didn't want to
talk about it at all. I thought you were going to say.
Well, that's true. Yeah. I mean, let's put it in perspective. But yeah, he, right, you know, right. I got him chatting, and then all of a sudden I mentioned next year, and he just said, you know, this is not what he wanted to deal with. So,
right.
But he's thinking about it. He has to. And I think obviously the franchise tag is very much in play. And I would think that the cap situation seems fine to me. I mean, I don't think there's any reason to think that they could not do that. But I would guess Forte is, you know, probably, you know, in the twilight of his career in Chicago, just because, you know, what you've seen from Langford and to a lesser degree, what you've seen from Kadeem Carey and figuring that you can find you know, another back to compliment those guys. They're in good shape, you know. And so, you know, the improved play of Jay Cutler, that's great. You want to keep that going. You don't want, you know, just even with Gase's status unknown, will he get a head coaching job? I think that's the most likely route from afar, is that they franchise Alshon, try to sign him to a long-term deal if they have to, play him on the one-year tag, and then go from there and let Forte go and address the offensive line and the defense.
Let's talk Thanksgiving night, Bears-Packers. First, Eric, what's your favorite Thanksgiving food?
Yeah, I think for protein-wise, I'll do dark meat. I won't touch the white. Too dry. Just don't go there. An underrated one, and it's my Polish blood pumping through my veins right now, is sauerkraut. Because I think sauerkraut, you can kind of mix it in with the potatoes. You can throw it on the dry turkey if you need to. Goes with ham or any kind of sausage you may have, some other meat there. So that's sort of an underrated one. And I like a good cranberry dish, but it can't be the canned, you know, cylindrical thing. It's got to be fresh, and it's got to have some sort of orange zest in it. But I'm a snob, guys. What can I say?
You can read more of Eric's Thanksgiving thoughts at Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner /Thanksgiving. And of course, you could watch him talk about it at 120 Sports. Bears Packers, and Eric, we'll wrap up talking about this game right now. The Packers maybe are back after what they did to Minnesota. You know, a couple nice plays from Rodgers. The defense stepped up when it needed to. And you look talent-wise, and Arthur and I do this every week, the Bears are not going to be the most talented team on the field Thursday night by a long shot. However, the way Cutler's been playing, the way that Vic Fangio and Adam Gase scheme things, you get Matt Forte back, it's going to be an emotional night. These guys find a way to make these games close. And a lot of credit, of course, to John Fox for doing that. How do you see this matchup and this game going?
Yeah, it's funny. A month ago, I'm sort of looking and talking with my bosses. Should we go? You know, should I be up there? And they said, no, the Bears stink. And you know, the Packers are rolling. And, of course, they obviously lose those 3 in a row. And the Bears sort of get back on track. And everything changed a little bit. I will not be making the trip to Green Bay. But it's funny how this thing has now changed 3 times. A month ago, and then before Sunday, and now after Sunday, there is sort of a different perception of this game. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think good coaching and strong, fearless quarterback play can get you go a long way. And I think we've seen a lot of that for the most part from the Bears this season. Now, look, I mean, the Packers' defense hasn't been terrible. I mean, I don't think they've been a great playmaking unit before Sunday. Obviously, the sacks were a welcome sight, certainly. Coverage-wise, they've been okay. Pass rush has been okay. And run defense has gotten better. I mean, that was something that plagued them early in the year. So that really hasn't been a huge problem. The biggest issue for them is quick three and outs, drop passes, and then shaky protection from the Packers. So, you know, if they cleaned a little of that up against Minnesota, that's good. But Aaron Rodgers really only had that one drive where he looked spectacular. He had more incompletions than completions. So if you can count on some cold weather, some drops, Eddie Lacy being tight, you know, he played a game that was terrific on Sunday, but quick turnaround for that. I don't see why the Bears can't keep this a close game.
Do you have a pick?
I do. I think the Green Bay will win it, but I think I actually made a choice for 120. I think I said something like 27-20 or 21 or something. I think it'll be a one-score game, and I think the Packers will pull away or at least keep them at arm's distance or something like that. But, you know, when you see this Chicago Bears team, you see a team that, frankly, has played a lot better than I thought they would. I think the pass rush helps a little bit, and it can cover up some things, and guys like Langford and you know, can kind of compensate for some ills. But, yeah, the total package has looked better than the sum of the individual parts would be. So I'm actually impressed with what they've done, in a tough spot here.
All right, Eric Edholm, Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner, 120 Sports. Of course, follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. Eric, thanks for joining us. Happy Thanksgiving, and enjoy your sauerkraut on Thursday
night. I will
do
that. Thank you. All right, guys.
All right. So, thanks, Arthur, we don't have to get into the referee stuff because, you know, we can go on that for a long time. You covered the NFC North for USA Today Sports. You really got your finger on the pulse of these Packers issues from what you saw on Sunday. Do you think some of it got cleaned up and it's going to continue to get better, or is this going to be an issue for them the rest of the season?
It's a tough call. I do think that one of the biggest issues they were having was certainly running the football. To see Eddie Lacy return to being that guy in the backfield was very promising. I think they were asking way too much of Aaron Rodgers. He had dropped back 61 times the previous week, and we know how much Mike McCarthy likes balance. So I do think that they've figured some things out, and I tend to agree with Eric. Everyone got carried away in a little mini defensive stretch where they were allowing a ton of yards, but that group has actually played pretty well and has contributors they weren't necessarily depending on, like, you know, Dayton Jones, some former first rounders who are coming on strong. So I think the Packers are going to be just fine and are still on top of this division.
And we'll learn a little bit more about the Green Bay Packers right now in our Behind Enemy Lines segment. We're joined now by Wes Hodkowitz, Packers beat writer for the Green Bay Press Gazette. You can follow him on Twitter at Wes Hod, WESHOD. And Wes, congratulations. You are our second two-time guest on the ChicagoFootball.com podcast. You should be honored.
I feel really honored. This is something I think I'm going to put up there with all the achievements that I have in journalism, although there isn't very many. I'm excited to be back. I'm can't believe it's already here. I mean, it seems like just yesterday we were talking about that regular season opener.
Yeah, and lots changed for these teams. But before we get to the important questions about the game, I got to ask you this: when Arthur and I are in Lambeau on Thursday night, I always love when there's brats and cheese curds. They're not going to get rid of those just because it's Thanksgiving, right? When you're talking press box meal.
No, they keep the brats for every meal. Although I got to be honest with you, I haven't eaten one in about 2 years.
Okay.
There's kind of a thing amongst the Packers beat writers that we usually try not to eat the brats. Not that there's anything wrong with them. It's just that, obviously that's such a big staple up here. We always try to eat the other stuff. They did shift the cheese curds to halftime, though. I think the Packers are trying to take a page out of some other teams' books and have some halftime food now. So you'll have to wait for your cheese curds till then, probably.
That's fine. I just wanted to make sure they were still going to be there.
They'll be there.
Okay, that was going to maybe affect my my drive up. But now that I know they're going to be there, all is well. Let's talk about the Packers, Wes. Kind of a weird losing streak. You've never covered a three-game losing streak for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
When they go up to Minnesota and beat Minnesota, how much of that, and Arthur and I were kind of just touching this, how much of that was, okay, the offense got back on track a little bit, we got Eddie Lacy going, this is a sign of things moving back to what we're expecting, or is this still going to be an issue with the offense kind of throughout the season that they're going to have to continue to try to work through?
Yeah, I think it's going to be an issue. I definitely don't look at it as coming out of that game in Minneapolis and the Packers are completely, you know, remedied, that this whole offensive struggles they've had are behind them and now this team can continue its ascent to the Super Bowl. I don't look at it like that at all. But the one thing that did stand out to me, and I wrote it for our paper on Monday, was that the Packers did finally find some balance in their offense. And I understand the way that things worked. You know, Eddie Lacy has not been the same running back he was the last 2 years. But even when he isn't in his peak form, he still is their best running back. And his natural athleticism and his drive, I thought, really showed in that game against Minnesota. You know, he did actually end up tweaking his ankle again. He ran through it, 22 carries for 100 yards, his best performance of the season. And I think that went a long way to this offense really being able to put some points on the board, because the fact of the matter is they still weren't perfect. Aaron Rodgers only completed 47% of his passes. Randall Cobb dropped two passes that were pretty easy. And, I mean, just right across the middle, nobody really there to hit him. He just couldn't bring him in. There's still issues in this offense, but I thought the fact that Eddie Lacy was able to play the way he did was a big reason they were able to get out of there with a win.
And, Wes, I want to shift gears a little bit to Green Bay's defense, because the Bears' best running game of the season was in week one against Packers. Forte had a big game, and Forte's done well against the Packers throughout his career, especially recently. And you look at that Packers defense, it seems to be playing a little better, obviously, against Detroit and Minnesota than it did certainly against Carolina and Denver, and then Phillip Rivers threw for 8,000 yards in that game. But what have you seen in terms of the progress of the defense over the season, and where are they at in terms of matching up if Forte plays against that Bears running game compared to week one?
The Packers have had a lot of issues this year with guys who can stretch the ball outside the tackles. I think the games in which they've had the most success have been the ones in which it's been more north and south runners. You know, when you look at, you know, the Marshawn Lynch's of the world, obviously they had a lot of success against Detroit, even though, you know, Detroit has the problems that they have without any other team's assistance. And, you know, they handled Adrian Peterson and that offensive line. That the key to that was really they just dominated them in the trenches. I mean, Mike Daniels and DJ Raji, I thought, had really good games. You have a lot of quickness and athleticism with Clay Matthews behind them. And the outside linebackers are playing better. Nate Palmer, the other inside linebacker, has played much better the last 2 weeks. I think that was where they've had the breakdowns with the run game. It hasn't necessarily been just that off that defensive line. It's been with everybody containing the run. And I thought that was a big thing for the Packers going into last week, is they tried to find themselves again defensively. You have to remember, through the first five games, they were number 7th-ranked defense, 4th against the pass, and they just free-fell, right, with the Phillip Rivers game. Peyton Manning puts up 500 yards with Denver, and then obviously the struggles that they had with explosive plays against Carolina. We didn't really know what this defense was anymore. They fell right back to where they were at in the middle of last season, too, at 23rd in total defense, and their scoring defense, you know, kind of plummeting. So I think the last 2 weeks, obviously when you play Detroit, you need to have a good performance with all the issues they have. But I think the way that they handled Minnesota and Teddy Bridgewater, 34 hurries, I think Pro Football Focus had him down for. He was hit 10 times, sacked 6 times. That's this defense at its premium. And when they can put pressure on the quarterback, they turn over the football, and that's how, you know, they've had success in the past and obviously had success against Jay Cutler with that approach. So it's so hard to tell in terms of if this defense is for real. I think they very easily could fall back and end up, you know, giving up another 400, 500 yards without any warning. But at the same time, you got to take what's in front of you. And the fact of the matter is they have played better these last 2 weeks. And I think their hope is that things have kind of stabilized after a rough stretch there in the middle of the season.
Wes, how much has Dayton Jones' improvement helped this unit and maybe the way the different ways that Dom Capers is using him this season?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. I'm interested to see when teams start scheming for this a little bit. You know, obviously Dayton is a lot like Julius in that he's not going to be dropping the coverage hardly at all. You know, it kind of eliminates some of the creativity that you could do with a Clay Matthews or somebody like that. But the fact of the matter is, this guy's actually playing well this year, and he's actually been healthy. And for his first two NFL seasons, the Packers just haven't seen that. He hasn't been that first-round pick that they needed him to be. They thought they were getting a three-down rusher when they drafted him out of UCLA, and as it turns out, he's pretty much been, you know, relegated to being an interior guy in their dime defense. So they made this move to put him at outside linebacker. Now he stood up for the first time last week, and he even got his first sack at that position now too. Probably arguably his best game as a pro, 2 sacks and 4 quarterback hits. So I was really impressed with what I saw from Daytona. I think the talent's always been there. I still don't know if it's going to end up translating to this defense, if this is the right fit for him. But the Packers felt he was playing well enough to earn more than the 10, 12 snaps he was getting in that sub package. So now they've put him at outside linebacker. He's rushing opposite Nick Perry in what is kind of the number two edge rushing line behind Peppers and Neal. And they had a lot of success with it. And my guess is that they're going to continue to try to do it. There are still some times he's going to look raw. You know, he got too far inside on one play, and that's what allowed Adrian Peterson to have his largest carry of the day of 11 yards on Sunday. But in general, I think that was one of the catalysts for them being able to turn up the pressure a little bit was getting him in that role and getting the production out of him that they did.
Wes, you're a Green Bay guy, right? You've lived there pretty much your entire life, correct?
That is correct.
Do you have a favorite Brett Favre memory? Because it is Brett Favre night at Lambeau Field on Thursday.
Yeah, it's funny because I never was really a huge big Packer fan when I was a kid. But I mean, obviously living in Green Bay, you can't help but notice it, and obviously notice what Brett Favre did. I joked about it during the game on Sunday. I thought one of the things that I always think about, even though it wasn't a play, I'm sure people think about Super Bowls and touchdowns and stuff like that. I still always get a kick out of the Brett Favre hopping over the squirrel at Milwaukee County Stadium in 1994, 1995. And there was a squirrel that popped out on the field at TCF Bank on Saturday, and they had, you know, ground control, so they're trying to swoop it up, and everybody, you know, it's that same just demoralizing, embarrassing thing where the people have to chase it, and it's just running around. That's always one of the things I always think was kind of funny, that clip of him actually skipping over the squirrel as it runs underneath him, and I thought that was... It probably isn't the big, you know, this touchdown or that touchdown, but I think that's something that I remember when I was a kid. I really laughed at, and I think a lot of people had a good time with, especially with SportsCenter, you know, kind of in its infancy of having, you know, the kind of the not plays of the week sort of deal. I thought that was something that always sticks out to me. But I know if you ask a lot of people here, I think him bringing back the Super Bowl in 96, 97 obviously stands out. The Favre game in 2003, where after his dad died, he basically had a near perfect game against the Oakland Raiders. I think that's probably goes down as, you know, I would say his best performance of his career, and just everything in between, you know, even the 7-interception game against, you know, the St. Louis Rams. The thing about Favre was, you know, there were so many things he did and so many things he didn't at times. But the fact of the matter was at that time, he was the perfect quarterback for this franchise. And obviously, you know, he was the one that got a fire lit back in the Packers after, you know, pretty much being stagnant for 20 years.
Yeah, I'm going to have to really race to get all my cheese curds at halftime so that I could watch the Brett Favre ceremony, which I think will be cool. And I grew up in Chicago, wasn't really a Bears fan necessarily. I was just a football fan, and everyone I grew up with, you know, hated Brett Favre, but I was just taken by watching him play. He was just a fun player to watch growing up, whether it was just the crazy plays and the touchdowns, the picks, as you said. So it'll be a cool event on Thursday night. Wes, before I let you go, I have to ask if you have a pick for Thursday night.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. I thought if the Packers ended up losing again on Sunday, I might go with the Bears, but the thing is I do think they still, I just going off the history of Capers and Cutler and the success he's had and obviously all the question marks the Bears have right now with their skill position players, I am going to stick with the Packers in this one. I don't even know what the line is yet. I didn't get out to see exactly what that is, but I think they're going to respond again. This is an opportunity now after they did have that 3-game stumble to potentially get 3 games back, going in back home next month against Dallas. I think this is an opportunity to really be able to separate themselves. They obviously got the edge now over the Vikings. They're going to need a lot of help to catch Carolina, but I just think they're going to do just enough if they were able to top them back in September. And I know this Bears team is a much different squad and playing a lot better football, but I just I like their chances now to maybe be able to keep this momentum going.
All right. Well, the Bears have played games close, so at least we'll see if it's a close game if they cover. I've seen spreads anywhere from 7.5 to 8.5 in that range.
That
for
seems
this
high one. To me. Yeah, that I could definitely. I would if you asked me to come up with a score on the spot, I probably said something like 27-24, something like that. But yeah, we'll have to see.
Actually, as I speak right now, Wes, I'm seeing 9-point Green Bay favorites.
Wow.
So,
you know, people bet Packers heavy, so obviously, you know, the Vegas needs to take that into account. But, boy, that's a lot of points. For a team that still hasn't really scored a lot.
All right, Wes Hodquitz of the Green Bay Press Gazette, PackersNews.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Wes Hod. Wes, thanks so much again for joining us for the second time this season.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll see you Thursday in Lambeau Field. And Arthur, before we talk Thanksgiving, I'm going to race through our Who Has the Edge. I'm going to tell you who I picked for each matchup, and you can tell me that I'm wrong because you know the Packers way better than me. Bears run game versus Packers run defense. I gave a slight edge to the Packers because the Bears just haven't really moved the ball on the ground. Not really sure how Matt Forte is going to look. I gave the edge to the Bears passing game because Cutler just finds a way. And by the way, we should shout out to Jay Cutler. Chris and Cavallari had their third child on Monday, so congratulations to them. Sailor is the name. I know that actually was not your child, Spencer Bowie, Arthur. I know I've gotten to learn his cry by now. Packers run game versus Bears run defense. I gave to the Packers because the Bears couldn't stop the Broncos, who are very bad at running the football. And then, of course, Packers passing game, Bears pass defense. Not as simple as just saying Aaron Rodgers, but I still gave the edge, of course, to Aaron Rodgers. So are you okay with those?
You're wrong about all of them.
I knew it.
Everything looks good. Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I just think that Packers stretch scheme is what worries me after watching how the Bears were last week and Eddie Lacy getting going. And then just watching that Packers front dominate the Vikings. The Bears are going to need a better effort because they struggled against a really good Denver front last week as well.
All right, let's talk Thanksgiving briefly. And I'm going to throw it to our executive producer, Dan Mott, throwing on the music there for us. Dan, I've been told you have a pretty good Thanksgiving story, so let's hear it.
I do, guys. So Thanksgiving is a great holiday with my family, and a lot of us get together and pack into a house in the city. And there's probably about 25 of us gathered in this small house that my aunt and uncle live in, and my aunt cooks an amazing Thanksgiving dinner, so shout out to her. However, I'm 30, almost 31 years old, and I still have to sit on the kids' side of the table, and there's all of us down there, as I'm sure some of our listeners can relate. We got done with dinner, and of course, a tradition with a lot of families would be to play, you know, a game of football. Well, we didn't go outside to play football. We decided to roll up or fold up a napkin to play, paper football. I flicked it. It was good through the uprights, but it smacked my uncle mid-conversation right in the face.
Nice.
Unbeknownst to the adults on the other side of the table. And so I still can't live that one down. This was a few years ago, or at this point maybe several years ago, but every Thanksgiving they're like, you're not going to hit Uncle Frank with something from the table again this year, are you? So that's my Thanksgiving memory.
Arthur, could you top that, or what's your favorite thing about Thanksgiving?
No, I can't top that, but I will. And you know, it won't be as funny for the listeners because they don't know the legendary Uncle Dan. But
Uncle Dan's Dan, the man.
Dan is talking about hitting his uncle with an imaginary whatever, kind of playing the field goal game, if you will. We're always wondering when Uncle Dan is going to hit the floor after his third or fourth martini. I'm mostly kidding. I guess more than the floor, it's whether he's gonna hit the couch and knock it up again because he's been known to pass out in the middle of parties. And no, Thanksgiving is also always very fun at my house. My mom has been entrenched in the football life for 30 plus years, but without fail, she will find a way to complain about a full slate of NFL games every Thanksgiving that everyone wants to watch.
Well, my bubby, when the schedule came out in April, texted me asking for Roger Goodell's number to want to know why the Bears were playing on Thanksgiving for the second year in a row. And it's fun to cover. I mean, look, Arthur and I are not going to complain at all about covering Bears-Packers on Thanksgiving night. It's going to be a special time up there in Lambeau Field. Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday, though, and I'll get to spend brunch with the family. One quick tradition, Bubby puts out all these like Thanksgiving art projects that we did when we were kids at the table, and I made a turkey. And it was one of those things where they had all the cutouts. You just had to kind of put them together, and it looks nothing like a turkey. I like the head is sideways. I like to say it's Picasso, and every year, bar none, one of my cousins will take a picture of it and text it to me if I'm not there, and everyone makes fun of it. So that's kind of our little Thanksgiving make fun of Kevin tradition in my household. But I do have to say, guys, I'm thankful for the two of you, of course, and for this podcast on this Thanksgiving week. So, of course, want to spread the love there.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin. And we're thankful for our podcast listeners as well. It's been a fun road this year, and we can only hope to get to continue to do it for many more.
Let's finish things up. We're going to skip player to watch because everyone's going to be watching Jay Cutler in his first game after being a father for the third time. So we all know that's coming. Let's go ahead and go to our picks. Let's start with you, executive producer Dan Mott.
Guys, I got Packers 28, Bears 24.
Arthur, who do you got?
Yeah, I don't see this as close. I hate to say it. I've got Packers 31, the same they scored last time. I think the Bears more banged up, only muster 16 points. It's closer than last year, but not close enough.
For those of you who listen for Hub's pick, Hub has Packers 30, Bears 20. He writes, the Packers may have gotten healthy about 4 days too soon for the wounded Bears to sneak into Lambeau and steal a win on short rest. So I went with a Bears cover, Packers win. I said Packers 26, Bears 20. Again, I see lots of field goals in this one. The Bears they still find a way to keep it close. And, you know, we'll see. By the way, fun fact I figured out this week, John Fox, the first time he's coaching on Thanksgiving since 1991 when he was the defensive backs coach for the Steelers. We'll see how he turns it around in a short week. So I just, you know, they always keep it close. I think they cover, but I have to give it to Aaron Rodgers at home in what should be a very emotional night at Lambeau Field. Before I go to the thank yous, I do, again, thanks to my roommates for putting up with me. My roommate Danny actually just emerged from his bedroom. Do you have a pick, Danny, Bears or Packers? He thinks it's Packers in a blowout. So so it's Packers all the way around, of course. All right, that does it for episode 13 of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. Don't forget, for all the best Bears news and analysis, visit us at ChicagoFootball.com. Follow us on Twitter at Bears_Insider. He's at Arthur Arkish. I am at Kay Fishbane. Go ahead and go on iTunes and subscribe. Give us a rating. That way you'll never miss an episode. We want to thank our sponsors, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Who says Black Friday should only be one day of great deals? Chevy's Black Friday sale is on right now. Check out all of the Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today and drive what the Hall of Famer Dan Hampton drives. A big thanks to our guests on today's show, Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports and 120 Sports, and Wes Hodkowitz of the Green Bay Press Gazette, previewing Bears, Packers. Our executive producer, Dan Mott, doing a great job on a short week. And for all of us at ChicagoFootball.com, happy Thanksgiving. Be sure to follow all of our analysis during Bears Packers on Thursday night. And we hope you have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.